Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
All right, sorry about that. We had some... Well, I mean, it's still not set right. I'm hearing way too much echo. I don't know what that's all about. Let's see if we switch. There we go. That's it. Okay. We figured out which button it was.
Yeah, now you sound great. There you go.
Right.
That was perfect.
There it is. So I apologize for that. All right, Eric Smush Crawford, do we have him?
Giving him a call right now.
Okay. Well, we'll see what's going on with him. Huh. This is, I guess, breaking news. Did you report this during SportsCenter? About there's a Louisville football player has been charged with leaving the scene of an accident. Their starting wide receiver, Josh Ali, scheduled to be in the Lexington courtroom next week on charges of leaving the scene of an accident without rendering aid and driving without insurance. He's facing a lawsuit filed June 29th against him by Kentucky Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance Company, which claims Ali owes damages paid to a man he rear-ended in the February 12th wreck. So let's bring in Smush right now. Eric, thanks for being with us. I was just alluding to your recent tweet, which literally is only about 12 minutes old. It's a story that broke, I guess, within the hour, at least to people like me. I didn't know anything about it. Josh Ali up for having to go to court for a hit-and-run situation. Did you guys know about this and people were just sitting on the story, or is this news to you guys as well?
No, we didn't know about it. This came and Jason Riley does. He did all of like the heavy lifting reporting on that story. I did the ask UK for comment and backfill his football background part of the story. So no, we don't know about these things. When we know about them, we report them. We ask the school about them and get them out there. We don't do like constant sweeps of court records for football players though. So, you know, stuff will slip through. Usually less things would slip through in Lexington than Louisville. For a lot of my career now, we seem to catch stuff pretty well everywhere. It just takes time sometime before we hear from somebody who was involved in it or whatever. But this is, you know, another one of those kinds of things. And the best thing I can say for any of these things, legal things we've been reporting on anyway, was that nobody was seriously hurt, but they are legal trouble. Generally, I don't think we would report on an athlete in a traffic situation unless there was an accident or a more serious charge, like leaving the scene or something like that.
Well, I mean, we'll see. They've still got the thing with the party hanging over their heads, and now this. And he's been a very productive player for them, and he is he's actually technically already graduated. He's working on a second degree, so he's had a long, distinguished tenure there. But I don't know. Let's, for the sake of argument, as I said, assume he's guilty of this. Is this a dismissible offense from the team, do you think, or is this a matter of you got to take care of it with your insurance company?
I think you just have to take care of it. I think he'll pay off. He'll pay, you know, whatever he's got to pay. And, you know, and a traffic offense is a traffic offense. I don't think there's any – I don't know what the leaving the scene will amount to. That's the kind of thing a lot of times on a first offense that, you know, you can plead down or amend down or whatever. But I want to see what his attorneys do and – all that, but no, I don't expect he will get kicked off the team for this. I would note, and we haven't had any response from Mark Stoops or the football program on this. He was a captain in 2020. He's not listed as a captain this year, I don't think. So that's one possible, consequence he may have faced for this having gone on. But let's just, I'm big wait and see on this kind of stuff. And The charge is there. He'll be in court in a couple weeks, and we'll see. But I would expect to keep playing this kind of story, frankly. This is a highly cynical view, but that you often see as programs get better and better in football, you a lot of times will see this kind of thing. I hate to say it, but let's just say.
I thought, I can't. Well, you said it, but, you know, I'm always sensitive to the fact that then people are going to make a deal. Oh, you're a U of L guy or whatever. And I certainly am a, U of L fan and have been since I came to town, more so since I started broadcasting the games. But I did think that, and I was going to say it earlier in the year, and I thought, let a sleeping dog lie. But I was going to say, boy, UK, I think, is really primed for a big season this year because they had a lot of off-the-field stuff in the offseason. That seems to be, as you said, the passport to big-time football. You've got to have, arrests and stuff going on in the offseason. So now you said it, so I can say, no, I was just echoing what Eric said. It wasn't me. He said it.
I'm your cover. Yeah.
That's it. You're my beard or whatever they say. But anyway, we shall see. All right, let's equal opportunity bad news. Been a rough week for Louisville. Their fans are irate about, and it was not nearly a full house. People were disappointed about the opening national TV game, and then the ones that did show up. I mean, listen, in fairness to them, the whole world is going through labor shortages. Nobody, every place you go, literally every business, you'll go in, if you just go about your day for, whatever you're going to do during the course of a day, pick up dry cleaning, whatever it is, every place will have a sign that says help wanted. Everybody's looking for workers. So, I mean, that's not the only thing they had a problem, but they were short-staffed and they had technical issues and the people were obviously irate. And so now they play a team that's been very good. They're 6.5 point underdogs at home. And it's another national TV game. I mean, it's not even, they haven't even started their conference season. And I make the case this is an enormously important game for Louisville. Or am I over dramatizing that? Am I getting caught up in the flotsam and jetsam here?
Yeah, well, and there's a couple of things. It's a huge game on the field. It is a huge game on the field. They need to win. Fans are, they want some reason for optimism. And if you drop this home game early in the season that, was kind of viewed fair or not as a 50-50 kind of game, already dissatisfied people are going to become more disillusioned and you're going to have more of an attendance problem than you already had. And, the whole concession issue just kind of is out there and it feeds into it. Guys like me, maybe you, I don't know. I mean, I'm guilty of this. I tend to forget how much money people are putting in to attending these games.
Yep.
And it's not just money, it's time, because college football is just obscenely too long. It takes way too long to play a college football game. And they're putting big money in. I went down because for some reason we didn't have soft drinks in the press box, so I went down myself to the concession stand in the fourth quarter because I wanted something. And I get up there to get it, and I look, and I see, like, a can of beer is $9.50. Mm-hmm. That's more than the National Football League average last year, $9.50. So if you're asking somebody to pay that much, you don't have a lot of margin for error if somebody's short-staffed or if your card readers don't work or whatever. You got to get it fixed. And I think Vince Tyree understands that, and they're under a lot of pressure, not just on the field, but they're under a lot of pressure in the concourses to get this stuff right. And if either one of them is screwed up, that's not going to be good for the university, its athletic department, and its bottom line.
Again, I always ask, from the guy, you do a very good job. You fit our show fantastically. You have a very good ability to be passionate about things and have a good sense of humor about things, but also to stand a half step back and observe and make a comment that's level-headed, and I appreciate that. Are they making too much about the guy they hired who had a whole bunch of tweets a long time ago, like 6-7 years ago, about how much he hated Louisville, and yet U of L wound up hiring him, and now the fans... And, of course, proving God has a sense of humor, the guy is in charge of, not in charge of, but he works in fan experience. So, yeah. But people are, he's got to go, he should be fired. And are they making too much of that, or what do you make of that?
It's interesting because I was wrestling with this before the story broke because I got tweets that I haven't even seen on the web that I had captured from the guy. And, I'm looking at him, and I asked Kenny for a comment. He gave me the same comment that everybody else has gotten. And we're sitting down trying to decide whether it's worth stirring up the firestorm from a journalistic standpoint, and what we do, you know, how do we handle this when some other outlet broke it? And, you know, it was on ESPN Radio, and, you know, your guys had it, and everybody else had it. So my, you know, he's a young guy. Some of these tweets, he was in high school, and some he was just a college student and didn't work for UK. And I just, you know, from my standpoint, I had trouble. You know, I didn't want to call down, you know, the wrath of the internet on him. I don't even know him, but he's a fairly young guy who tweeted a lot of trash talk. And, you know, like you said, the world works in mysterious ways, and now he's working for the people he was trash talking. And I'm sure that at the University of Louisville, you know, he likes the people there, and I'm sure they've been good to him and nice. He will encounter people all over that campus, just like you would if you were a UL fan that went to work at UK. Great people who are grounded, who support you in your work. I mean, these universities are full of fantastic people. I worried that it would be more than what was called for a guy who tweeted a bunch of dumb and obnoxious stuff where he was. Having said that, it does point to either a lack of due diligence or something else, because if you're UofL, you really, really need to stay away from somebody who's made the kind of comments about your athletic department in a public forum under his own name. That's just not something that looks good for you as a department. So that's where I was headed with the story. I think when it broke, we were kind of looking at going through to see how the department has done on some due diligence on various things. When the story on this guy broke and it became a big deal and he deleted his Twitter and all that, but you know, it's I don't like to see a guy roasted for stuff he tweeted when he was in high school or even early in college. But the whole notion of fan experience, and when you bring that to bear on a guy in his position right now, I understand why fans are mad, because they hired somebody who at heart doesn't really feel the way they do about this program that he's been hired to represent.
I've talked about this before, though, and you were, again, very level-headed answer, and you're right. I mean, I'm sure he's not exactly way up the food chain in terms of the administration there, and you don't want to just, you know, beat a young guy, you know, senseless over something like this. But just the other side of the coin, if you will, is this is kind of how fans see it anyway, though, right? I mean, I talk about this all the time. Like when Charlie Strong went to Texas, and people see it as a fan. Your dream is to be at UofL. You're a UofL fan, or if you're a UK fan, or I don't care who you root for, pick a school. That's your team. It doesn't matter what other teams are out there. This is your team. And so when you're there, you think, why in the world? It's not like you're suddenly going to say, all right, well, now I think I'll start rooting for Texas next year, or for, you know, Northwestern or something. You root for who you root for. But this is what they do for a living. I mean, and this is just it's not their SoCavalry. When they're here, I'm sure they want UofL to win every bit as much as you do, but it's a job. It's their career. And if there's a better or a different job that offers something else somewhere else, then they go. It's not a slap in the face, but everybody takes it that way because they look at it as a fan rather than, well, I'm sure most of the people listening haven't had one job in their lifetime. They've probably moved for the same reasons. So, you're never going to get anywhere with that, because what is it? You discuss logic with emotion, you wind up, you know, going nowhere.
No, and in this case, you know, the whole fan experience group, and then this guy doesn't have any new fan experience. He's doing a scoreboard. He's there because he's got technical ability. He can work with Adobe Premiere. He can make the stuff and probably turn it out quickly, and does a good job at a very specific thing that he does. It doesn't have anything to do with fans and concession stands or any of this other stuff that fans are upset about. With good reason on a lot of cases. But maybe whoever's in charge of that department needs to, you know, it needs to be, you know, you need people there. And I think Vince is this kind of person, is the irony of it. He's catching all kinds of heat right now. But I think he does have empathy with fans, because he was one, basically, mm-hmm. when he came to this job. He showed up at games. But that, you know, I think you can get into these jobs and get into interviewing people, and, you know, you look at their qualifications and everything else, but one of the big qualifications for that, you know, to be a leader of fan experience, is that you have to really empathize with these people who are fans and know what feeds into it. So I don't know if there's a disconnect somewhere along the line or what. I do know that Louisville, we talked about pandemic and everything else. I mean, Louisville laid off a ton of people last year.
They did.
And a lot of those were longtime employees. And you lose some just kind of basic know-how and knowledge, and somebody who's done this 100 times, and it's like falling out of bed for them. But, you know, without them there, some things could fall through the cracks. And I think more things seem to be falling through the cracks. And it's not just a U of L problem. It's everywhere. But it's manifest here. And, you know, we'll have to deal with it.
Talking to Smush, Eric Crawford from WDRB, as the football season starts to get rolling here. UK has a chance to get off to a very good start. They don't even have the point spread up for Chattanooga, so I assume they are going to be favored by many, many points. And then, you know, they have a chance. I think their next game is home also, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? I don't know. But I think
they're on the road, but it's South Carolina.
Oh, that's right. That's what it was, South Carolina. So they got a very realistic chance to be 4-0 and 2-0 in the league, and that's just, you know, the way the schedule breaks down for them. We've had some other years. I mean, even going back to Coach Brooks, I think, where they get off to, you know, they played some non-conference games early and they get off to a 4-0 start, and then they really struggled later. But they're certainly not the favorites to win the SEC, but it doesn't look like they are that outclassed in SEC games. I mean, you would think they'll be at least competitive. So they have a very long-winded way of saying, okay, knowing that they could get off to a 4-0 start, what do you project as a win total for this team, looking at the rest of the schedule? What's realistic?
Well, this team can have a special season. I mean, I've talked for a couple of years, especially when they're gearing up to have good years, about the prospect of them taking that next step, which is to be a contender in their division of the Southeastern Conference. And I think this team can do it, partially because of the schedule, because they're 9 wins very much on the table for this team, and who knows if they can jump up and beat a Florida. I wouldn't expect them to go to Athens and win at all. But, you know, the LSU game to me looks a lot more winnable than it did at the beginning of the season after they lose their season opener, you know, on the road and are in a little bit of disarray there, and they're coming to Commonwealth Stadium. So, you know, this team, you know, look, 9 wins is nothing to turn your nose up at, and they've got a decent history against Florida. They got a chance to give Florida a game, I think, in Commonwealth Stadium. So they're looking at a chance for to do something, I think, really special. And you know, you don't, if you're Georgia, you have that chance every year, or Alabama, or you know, Florida, or whatever. Kentucky, you know, they had a chance a few years back. They have a chance every once in a while. This is one of those chances, and, you know, it looks to me like they've got the team and the talent and the depth to do it. Defensively, you know, we're going to see what they've got. Somebody's going to come along and punch them in the face. We're going to have to see how they respond. But to me, on the field at Kentucky right now, this is time. It's time to go, and they've got a real chance to go and do something special.
And, I again, if you listen to the show, this isn't my cup of tea, but I do deal with reality. Do you think, let's say they put a 9-win season on the board, do you think it's time then for Mark Stoops to say, unless I retire here, I'm thinking of going somewhere? Or do you think he's perfectly happy and just going to stay here? I mean, it's not like he's, you know, doesn't have things to work with and hasn't had success. But, you know, there's still, it's a big gap between them and the very top of the league. And I don't know, you might say, well, I don't know where I could go or I'd close that gap. But if you're going to go, that might be a good time to do it. You certainly aren't going to go after COVID year. But they get 9 wins. He's got a quarterback he's been, you know, clamoring to have for a long time here, and I don't know, it just seems like the time might be there's a word there. In other words, it would be the right time to go. But you're a writer. Give me a good word for that. It would be...
Well, it's adventitious or propitious.
That's the word I was looking for. Say that one again.
Propitious.
That's the word. Propitious. That's the word I want.
Opportunistic.
See? Well done. No, propitious. I knew I had a P in there.
Yeah.
And I knew it wasn't pickled.
What's going to be open? It all depends on what's open. I mean, USC... I mean, I would guess everybody, if you're a coach, would look at USC, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's a good, I mean, it's a good job, but it's also a big job, and can you make it? Is it a fit for Mark Stoops? I don't know. I, you know, the one place I always thought it was a danger that he could go to, because he came from there to go to Kentucky, was Florida State. I don't think that's a real good job right now anymore.
Right.
I think Kentucky, from a budget standpoint, you know, you have to me, if you're a coach in the SEC and you get some degree of success and you move it up, it would take a whole lot to leave the SEC, because there's a lot of financial stability that's in the SEC that isn't anywhere else.
True.
So I don't know if I see Stoops that, you know, if Texas were to be open or something like that and they came after him, maybe. But I don't see a lot of places that that I think would, you know, should turn his head a whole lot. He may have his own list in his head. But what would you leave Kentucky to say, go to Nebraska?
No.
I don't know. I don't think so. You know, I just – so I know it sounds strange because Kentucky doesn't have this great – football history, but I don't see a ton of places that I think would I'd consider a real threat, you know, at least it looked like they're going to be on the board right now.
I think you'd have to go to a place that has one of two things, in my humble opinion. It's either got a built-in recruiting base, and I don't think Nebraska has. I mean, they used to be. They would go get those big old farm boys and stock that line, and, you know, and then they could just run the wishbone. But those days are a generation ago. So I don't think they've got that. Or they've got a situation where, you know, they have all of the I don't know what the word I'm looking for. The resources where you would say, okay, they've really closed the gap on, you know, whoever the best teams in the country are. And I don't think you're looking at a Nebraska that's closing the gap on the Alabamas of the world, or the, you know, the Clemsons even of the world. So I don't think that's it. Or you know, and if you want to add a third thing where you've got, you know, recruiting advantages. And I don't think, you know, he hasn't. Yeah. And he hasn't recruited the Midwest. I mean, that part of the Midwest, right? I mean, he's basically gotten – he's really killed Ohio. I mean, he's just been all over Ohio.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I think
– you know, a lot of Big Ten schools would look at him, I would think.
Yeah.
But there's not – you know, the coveted jobs are not open. Ohio State, Penn State, you know, what you just put on the list, they're not – they're pretty solid right now.
Yep.
So I just think he's – you know, he's in a good spot at Kentucky. They'll pay him more money if he wins big. Well, it'll be interesting. It was fun here when Lamar Jackson was really going and they were rolling. Remember, they were top three, top five. We really got to experience what it was like to be in the midst of college football frenzy. I mean, it's bigger than anything you can imagine when it's going. And Kentucky's just a few wins away from getting to that spot and experiencing that. And where that might carry Stoops or the program or whatever, you know, will be interesting to see, because you can recruit a lot better when you get a lot of that going, although Louisville didn't really take advantage of its time. But Kentucky's, you know, they're on the verge of being able to do something like that. So we'll see if he can do it.
We're talking about other conferences and other jobs. What do you make, you know, the people around the league, and I don't think it's them just putting a happy face on it, around the Big 12 seem thrilled about the expansion with BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, and Houston. And as I look on it, I kind of agree with them. I think, you know, I think they did about as well as they could do. They brought in, you know, they've got some really strong basketball programs in that league, too, and they've got some history of good basketball there. Houston was in the Final Four last year. Cincinnati's been a basketball power in years past. And then, you know, they've got some football. And most importantly to them, they've got decent-sized media markets. I think they did about as well as they could do, given the landscape. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, if you're going to have to add programs, those are good ones to add. I don't like seeing Memphis sitting on the outside of things right now. I think they would have been a good pickup, but I just don't think the numbers all fit, and they wanted to reach into Florida and get Central Florida for, you know, obvious reasons. That if it's not the biggest university in the country, it's close to it. They have a massive enrollment, and you know, a lot of resources, and they've got a national name for themselves now. So that's good. Cincinnati certainly deserves inclusion, and so I'm glad to see those programs picked up. I don't know how any of these conferences work. I don't know how the Big 12. How you manage having West Virginia, you know, just the travel nightmares that there are for those schools. But I keep waiting for there to be a geographic you know, shift or, you know, reshuffling just for all the other sports but football, so that, you know, these schools aren't spending outrageous amounts of money just to travel to conference games. But we haven't seen that yet. But I think the Big 12 did all right. And I don't know how it's going to be, you know, accepted in the Power Five and years moving forward. But I don't think the Power Five or whatever you want to call it will always look the way it does now. I think we'll see, you know, if something's going to keep evolving, and we'll get to something else and see how that works. So for now, I think the Big 12 did the best it could, and I'm happy with those schools that got in, because I think they're all pretty deserving.
Just before I let you go, a thought on Memphis, because that is a good point. There's a column written here by Matt Norlander, and I think it's interesting. He said it came down to basically Memphis or Cincinnati, and Cincinnati is a little bit bigger media market, and they have had a little bit more success historically, and so they won the photo finish for the fourth spot. The other ones were in for obviously different reasons, and so Cincinnati got the nod there. So he said what Memphis should do now is try to be the Gonzaga of the East. In other words, forget about trying to align themselves with a conference they got passed over. Put all your chips on the hoops package. And, you know, football can be an interesting little sideline, but basically try and, you know what you're best at. They've had a history in basketball, and they should try and do what Gonzaga's done in this part of the country, and just, you know, not apologize for the league they're in. Gonzaga doesn't apologize. Go out in the preseason, play everybody and their brother, and then really try and just, you know, make hang your hat on basketball. Is that a more viable option to you, do you think, than trying to continue to figure out? Because he also made the good point that just because the Big 12's at 12 now doesn't mean they're done. If they could find another partner, they could add two more. You know, Memphis could go in with somebody else. So it's not out of the realm of possibility they could still join a league. But what do you think the course of action for them should be?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to dominate whatever league you're in and be really good. You can play a national schedule. I mean, Memphis will play whoever will play them, and they'll do fine. They've already got a head start on the national profile, you know, with Penny Hardaway, and they get great players every year, so they're always going to be, you know, welcome on TV if they can get the right matchups. So I think that's a good course of action. My only concern is that Scott Davenport at Bellarmine wants to be the Gonzaga of the East. So now they're trying to build too, because he's got Catholic University he's trying to build up, and they're not quite in that same recruiting circle, but who knows? Maybe they'll get to play Memphis here down the road too. They're certainly playing Gonzaga, you know, in November, and making a big road swing with those guys, which should be exciting. So, but no, that's as good as Memphis can do, and you know, build with basketball and keep your football relevant, but. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a great basketball program. The Big East is full of them, and you can have success doing that.
My friend, it's great to talk to you. Hopefully I'll see you soon, and you stay safe and stay well out there. Thanks.
You do the same, Bob. Thank you.
All right, Eric Crawford, WDRB, with us here on a We Want to Know Wednesday. We Want to Know Wednesday, and we've got some I'm always interested in music. Here are some songs banned from the radio for the weirdest reasons, and we'll do that on the other side of this break. One of them is Neil Greenberg is now. I thought he was next hour. What do I know? Maybe Neil knows some songs. All right, well, then I'll give you the answer to the question. This song was banned by everybody for a long time.
We want to know Wednesday.
For no actual reason. It was a song written way back in the 1960s. The song was not only banned by radio stations, but investigated by the FBI because authorities...
Communism?
No, the authorities believed that the song's incomprehensible lyrics contained uncouth words. The song still stirs controversy in the 21st century. In 2005, high school superintendent banned his marching band from performing the song over its lyrics, despite the fact the band was only playing it instrumentally. The song is the Kingsmen's Louie Louie. Well, you have
what?
No earthly idea what he's saying. No idea what he's saying. Yep, Louie Louie. If you can figure out what that guy's saying, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din. So obviously, people always assume the worst, and that's what they did. It's unbelievable.
That's really weird. I'm sorry. That's really weird.
I mean,
Louie, oh no, me gotta go. I said, Louie, oh baby, me gotta go. Fine little girl waits for me. Catch a ship across the sea. Sail that ship about all alone. Never know if I make it home. That's 3 nights and days I sail the sea. Think of girl constantly. On that ship, I dream she's here. I smell the rose in her hair. And they banned it over this. Because they have no idea what you're saying.
So they what? They just thought it was like communism?
Well, he must be. We don't understand, you know, these kids today. Great song.
That's downright dangerous.
Now I want to be a communist. Trying to get us thrown off the air, Nick. What are you doing? If you know the words, you can make it out, but if you don't know the lyrics, you have no earthly clue.
All right, so a caller just called me.
Yep.
And said that
we want to know Wednesday.
Something that might have contributed
to
this.
Wednesday. We want to know Wednesday.
Was that at some point in the song, it used to be "It's time to screw," and they changed it to get it, like, you know, radio appropriate,
friendly.
But people were still singing it that way, and that kind of fueled the whole, like, no, we can't play this anymore. Because nobody ever has sex. People grow from the ground. There's no sex. No sex before the 60s.
Well, I mean, the 2005, and we've had, you had, you know, everybody's had cleaned up versions. Charlie Daniels may rest in peace. You know, I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best it's ever been. If you hear him say son of a gun, that song doesn't have nearly the impact. It's fabulous when he says it the way he's supposed to say it. And then, you know, there's other long songs on this list for that reason. There was a list of the 30 songs banned from the radio for various reasons. John Lennon's song, Imagine, was banned by some very, very right-leaning radio stations because he sings about imagine a world with no religion and no possessions, and that made the people lose their minds. Tom Petty, one of his biggest songs was You Don't Know How It Feels. The original version was banned by many radio stations because of drug-related lyrics. They quickly edited the version and released it, skipping over the offending line. So there's a history of, you know, songs that have done that. But this one, I mean, I don't remember the screw line ever, but I get keeping in mind, A, I was very young, and B, I have no idea what the guy was saying anywhere in that song. I had no earthly idea what the lyrics were. So maybe he was saying that. But thank you for the update on We Want to Know Wednesday. We'll get some more of those songs in as we roll on. But next is going to be our good buddy, Neil Knuckles Greenberg. And he's going to talk to us about making some money, among other things. So stay with us here on ESPN 680-105.
You're locked on The V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Week one may be over, but the season's just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off week two, DraftKings giving all new customers a can't-miss offer. Bet just $1, one single dollar, on any football game this week, and you'll receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. That's right, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet at least $1 on any football game. DraftKings, safe, reliable, secure. Makes it easy for you to deposit and withdraw at your convenience. But there's only one way to do it. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code code WHBE to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code WHBE, and you'll get $200 in free bets instantly this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, Indiana only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Our friend, who is going to give us an idea perhaps of some places where you can make some money on those aforementioned games, is our friend Neil Greenberg, Knuckles Greenberg from the Washington Post, who joins us right now. Neil, thanks for being with us. I am far from an NFL expert, but I do enjoy it and follow it. And picking just winners last week, and I just did it quickly, not even working in the point spread. I only was 8-8. That's an idea of how difficult it is to handicap in the NFL, especially early in the season, I think. But it also, I'm told by the people who make such money at this, in college football especially, but the NFL as well, sometimes you get your best values early in the year. You can make some, I mean, I know a lot of guys that think they really can rake it in the first 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know why after that, maybe because they have a pretty good idea in their mind who's going to be a good team, and they haven't shown it yet. Now all of a sudden the whole country's jumping on board with them. I don't know. But let me ask you a two-part question about that. Is it more lucrative early in the year for the sports player? And if so, what teams are you looking at, either in college or the NFL, that may fit that bill for this season?
I don't buy too much into the you can only, or you're most lucrative in the earlier season. I do think that in the early part of the season, expectations are out of whack. They're out of whack coming into week one, and they're certainly out of whack exiting week one. I think there's a lot of irrational exuberance. There's a lot of overreaction. So that's probably why people say, they can take advantage of the market, I guess. But there's always value to be found. I wouldn't say that any one week is better. I think you just have to anticipate where the smart money's going to go, which isn't easy. And just try to put your money where theirs is. And for example, right now, I think there's some money coming in on Washington for tomorrow's game. So something like the money line, in that respect might be a good value. And the other thing I think a lot of people don't understand is that making money at gambling is a lot different than picking winners. Like, you can pick favorites all day long. Doesn't mean you're going to make money.
Right.
So you have to, you have to look for value. And, right now I think, to use Washington as an example, they're -170 on the money line in a lot of different sports books. But there is some out there that was willing to give you like 159 earlier this morning. Now that's since bumped back up to -175. So you have to look for those type of values to make money, because that's really the only edge you're going to get.
See, I always thought along the same lines of what you're saying there, is if you can find a team that is not historically a good team, a team that does not have one of those brand names, that does not have that big national following, that because those teams attract fan bets a lot of times from places across the country. But if you can find that team, I think sometimes you can make money too, because the people, the odds are determined by what the people are betting, and sometimes they don't, the non-sexy teams, if you want to call it that, don't get a lot of play, and they wind up having a good team, and early in the year maybe you can make some money on that. So I think that's true in the NFL. It certainly is true in college. There will be certain teams that are always going to get overbet, if you will. It's true in any sport. I remember when I first moved to town here and went to Churchill Downs, I used to joke they could put Pat Day on a lawn chair and he'd go off at like 5-2. People would just look at Pat Day and bet. Well, I think it's probably true for some teams in the NFL also. Maybe the Dallases of the world, Green Bay. Like, Green Bay's a good example right now. There's two different things going through my mind right now. Maybe they really are bad. Maybe the offseason really distracted them. But my friend Will Wolford, who used to play in the NFL with the Buffalo Bills, said the most dangerous team is a team that just got embarrassed on the road and then is coming back home, because the coach has everybody's attention, and that's exactly what the Packers are. They get humiliated in the opener, and now they play a Detroit team that they should outclass, and he says he doesn't care what the spread would be in that game, take them. So if that's true, then they would cover the 10.5 points. So
11
I'm not sure he's
now.
Not right.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
It's 11.5 now.
Wow. Yeah.
Packers are favored by 11.5. And, you know, when you talk about the Packers in terms of, you know, reputation preceding them, when this line first opened, it was like minus 1,000 on the Packers, plus 700 on the Lions. I can't remember any team, even like New England in their heyday when they were, you know, en route to a perfect season, being minus 1,000 on the money line.
Right.
So that was quickly corrected to Detroit, ended up being now, what, plus 400. But, you know, even at plus 700, you know, again, I mean, their chances of losing are probably pretty good to Green Bay. But it all comes down to what type of odds are you getting to go the other way. And, you know, to get 7-1 on an NFL team after the Packers just got, you know, their doors blown off by the Saints, you know, shows you exactly how you can, you know, how you can find value, whether it's week 1, week 2, or, you know, later in the season.
Well, that's a good example. Now, the Saints, you know, we always have recency bias. They just look great in their opener. So now they go on the road, and they're favorites on the road. The Panthers are 3.5-point underdogs at home. And, you know, there's a lot of people who make a lot of money betting NFL dogs at home. Are people overreacting to the Saints based on that opening win?
I don't think so. I am a big Jameis Winston fan for this season. I put my money behind it. I have bets for him to have the most passing yardage, passing touchdowns.
Wow.
I think that he's going to have a monster season with New Orleans. So I think that they're going to be for real. I you know, Carolina obviously has a big time player in Christian McCaffrey, but I think New Orleans is for real. I think 3.5 might be a little bit light in this game. You know, like you said, I mean, it was one big game. And, you know, certainly going on the road, we've seen it before. And, you know, we saw a lot of underdogs win last week. And historically, week 2 is even better for underdogs against the spread. So would it surprise me if Carolina covered here? No. But I am leaning towards the Saints in this one.
Talking to Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post, and you make an interesting point, because I've looked at some weeks in the NFL where quite literally the home team was the favorite in every single game. This week, I know they're not big margins. That's to me the entertaining part of the NFL. These games are all 3.5, 3.5, 2.5, 2.5,
yeah.
5.5. But the fact of the matter is, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams that are home dogs, and some pretty good teams. The Ravens are home underdogs, for example. But
yeah, that was a little bit surprising. I think I think Baltimore is probably a little bit better than people are giving them credit for. I can certainly see them. I personally would take them plus the 3.5 points when you get past the key number of 3. And like you said, they're a very good team at home. If it's anybody else but the Kansas City Chiefs, you're probably not seeing them as the underdog. But you know, Kansas City looked vulnerable. I don't think that their heads and tails better than Baltimore. But that certainly is a team that's you know, that looks like it's pretty decent value. And you know, I will say this: I think with the proliferation of sports betting across the country, you know, I think a lot of these lines are also protection against the teaser bets. You know, those bets when you can move the line 6 points. You know, generally speaking, you want to tease down a big favorite, say 7.5 to 8.5 to get past the key numbers, 2 key numbers, and then tease up a 1.5, 2.5 point underdog to get past the number. When they set it at +3.5, there's really not a lot of value in doing that because you're only moving through one. So I think I wonder if that has anything to do with it. It's something I'm going to ask around about. But it seems very strange that we don't see any type of point spread like that this week.
Buccaneers, I mean, it was a discussion. You know, we love to get ahead of ourselves. I mean, so can they run the table? And then they were all out to win their opener. I mean, but I understand why people would say it. They return all their starters, both sides of the football. But, I mean, do you expect them to be that dominant this year? I mean, Dallas really easily could have won that game. And the Buccaneers now take on a Falcons team at home with their 12.5-point favorites. How dominant do you expect this team to be this year?
I don't expect them to be dominant. You know, age is still a huge factor. I get Tom Brady looked like he was 20 years old the other night, and certainly hasn't shown many signs of aging. But you know, there's a lot of mileage on those tires, and same with Gronkowski. I mean, you know, he's let's face it, he's lived a hard life in terms of, you know, having fun and playing and partying and what have you. I think, you know, in the NFL, eventually that catches up to you. I'm not saying it's caught up to Tampa Bay just yet, but I'm certainly willing to take the Falcons and 12 points to see, right? I mean, that's, you know, can Tampa Bay beat them by 2 touchdowns? Maybe, but you know, I think Atlanta could at least hang around. So I know it was like 13 at one point, but it looks like it may have drifted down to 12.
People seem to still be all in on the Browns. They're 11.5-point favorites over the Texans.
Rinse and repeat every year.
Yeah, but, you know, the Texans won their opener despite all the crap that went on in the offseason. They put 37 points on the board and won their opener, and yet the Browns are almost 2-touchdown favorites. Again, Cleveland's home. It's a great place to play, blah, 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 but that's a lot of points.
Yeah, again, I mean, you know, there's a lot of parity in the NFL, and, you know, we don't see a lot of blowouts. The most likely margin of victory is still 3, 7, 9, 10, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. typically the type of margin of victories that we see. So, you know, whenever I see a team that's double digits, you know, I always have to pause because the Browns, you know, we talked about the reputation early on, right? If Houston wasn't reputed to be, you know, in the tank and not really looking to win and only mm-hmm. in it for the number one pick, and, you know, obviously they have other issues surrounding that team, you know, maybe this is 7 points. But, you know, for the Browns to be favored 12.5 points over them, I mean, I don't know. I don't see it. I would definitely take Houston and the points here and see what Houston has, because I'm not sold just yet that they're going to be the worst team in the NFL.
Neil Greenberg with us here. You know, there's so many college games, obviously. It seems kind of futile for me to just try and cherry pick a few. But are there any that jump out at you that you say, boy, that would be an interesting game? I try and find teams that are of local interest, or the one that like are the national games with you know, a kind of two powers that kind of clashing. But it doesn't always mean those are the ones you've looked at. Any have come to your mind? And I know you're big. You play the number a lot too, don't you? You do over under, which I still don't do as well as I should. So any of those
do. I'm interested in the Louisville game against Central Florida, only because the line has moved so much. It moved from +9, it's now down to +7 on Louisville's side, so I'm interested to see how that shakes out. And also Army UConn is another one that really wasn't on my radar at all, but there was just a lot of money coming in on the totals, and the total got smashed down from 50.5 down to as low as 46 at one point. It's now
wow.
back up to 48. I mean, but that's a huge move, and you know, Army, you know, doesn't play particularly fast, and you know, UConn's UConn. So I'm interested to see how that storyline plays out, mostly from just a betting perspective, because there was a lot of movement on both those games.
So you think that the people are expecting that to be a lower scoring game because they had it at 50?
I do, yeah. I was able to jump in on the under 50.5 when the line was set early on in the week, and then I started to get plus money on under 49.5, and even got some good plus money on under 46, and you know, here we are at 48.5 as the over under heading into the night. So, you know, that to me, that there had to be a lot of money coming in, because you know, that's a lot of movement for just a couple of days. So we'll see what happens.
Central Florida and Louisville's over under number 67.5. That's one of the highest in college football this week.
I'm on Louisville with the at +9. I also took them again at +7.5 to get past the number. You know, again, I mean, it's just about value, right? I mean, it's just about, you know, where are the smart books, smart money going, and, you know, just try to take a spin with them. And that's really what, you know, betting on these games about. You have to, you know, there can be no emotion in it, right? It's just strictly, you know, what am I getting for the odds? And if they're in your favor, you take a chance.
Well, it's funny because to that end, I mean, I'm shifting sports altogether now, but I was watching a report on, I forget which, it was ESPN or MLB Network, but they were talking about Toronto. Toronto, quite literally, may not make the playoffs at all. But if they do, there are people who think they have a chance to run the table and at least get to the World Series, if not win it. And you can get a pretty good price on that, I would think.
Yeah, I wrote about that. I wrote about, you know, Toronto's got to be one of the scariest teams out there. I know that they haven't been playing well over the last couple, but, I mean, that lineup's tough. And, you know, they got pitching to boot. They're a pretty, you know, well-rounded team. And if not for, you know, some inconsistencies early on, you know, maybe we're talking about them competing for the division title, not necessarily just trying to hang on to a wild card. But, yeah, I mean, I don't want to face that lineup, right? I mean, you know, Vladimir Guerrero is having an MVP season, if not for the, you know, amazing two-way star in Anaheim.
Right.
He could threaten for the Triple Crown, and, you know, that's probably another storyline we talk about. If he wins the Triple Crown, where does that place him in the MVP voting? Does he move past Ohtani? I don't know. But, yeah, Toronto could be, you know, it's one of those teams that could be very difficult to face. And like you said, I mean, that's, you know, it all depends on how, you know, what chance you give them to make the playoffs, first of all, and then, you know, to go deep. But that number can certainly provide some value, you know, depending on if they can right the ship quickly.
Neil, it's always great to catch up with you. Hopefully we'll talk next week, and good luck on your selections this week, and we'll catch up with you and hopefully celebrate your wins.
I'm glad to talk to you again. I missed you.
Yeah, me too. It's good to catch up with you. Thanks, my friend. Take care.
All right, stay safe.
Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post. We are going to take a break, top of the hour, and then we'll come back and do more radio with you, with all of you. And We Want to Know Wednesday. I have some more of those songs for you. It's interesting. It's really an interesting read, actually.
By the way, our buddy JR, who wished Mabin a happy birthday earlier today.
Oh, it's Mabin's birthday today?
I think next week or so, or early. It's a little early birthday, but... he called and said that there's a song called Annie Had a Baby that came out before Louie Louie and is way raunchier than even Louie Louie with, you know, Time to Screw or whatever. So he said it was very interesting that song came out earlier. He's not even sure it's radio appropriate today, but that was getting played before Louie Louie, and that song was able to play, but Louie Louie was not. So a very interesting call from our buddy JR. It was funny.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's fascinating to see what gets bounced and what doesn't and why. And there's a song, and I feel like I'm going to be very embarrassed about this.
Well, by all means, you should keep going. By the way, our buddy Darren Rogers is going to join us. About 2:15.
So they're opening at Churchill Downs.
Yeah, and they're doing a nice thing for John Asher, too. So he's going to join us. So even
he's still on their recording. You know, that's kind of sweet. If you call
nice.
Churchill, he still comes on and says, you know, if you'd like publicity, press 1. If you'd like, you know, whatever, press 2. That's kind
of
cool.
You know, he had some of the best pipes ever. Great guy.
No question.
Yeah, he's definitely.
But anyway, there's a song. Evidently, maybe you know this. Britney Spears did. And it's it says, if you see, now I'm afraid I'm going to say it and then realizing, oh my God, the reading about it, it says it's because if you say the title, the radio stations would refer to it as If You See Amy. Okay. But the real name of the song is If You Seek Amy.
Yeah, but it sounds like she's spelling.
What?
F-U-C.
If You Seek Amy. Oh, please. That's a stretch.
I mean, it does kind of sound like it on the song.
Well, I'm glad you explained it to me. So, oh, I see. So if you say F-U-C, oh, but you're still not saying the last letter, even if you do seek Amy. It's just if you see Amy is F-U-C, Amy. So if you say, that's crazy. That's really a stretch. That's really a crazy stretch. It's like Robert Klein. He has a bit about that. You know, when I was
you're listening to Kentucky ESPN 680. Hey. WHBE Newburgh and 105.7 WHBE FM Eminence Frankfurt.
Why him just march all over me like that?
Sorry, I had to get that in there.
Okay. But, they, you know, they used to pay people to go through magazines and find sex in ads. That was a big thing, supposedly. They were hiding things in ads that were, you know, sexual. And I was a communications major, so I found a textbook that had done a study on this, and I saw the ads they were talking about. I have no earthly idea. Then again, I didn't get If You Seek Amy, so I didn't get that. So maybe I missed these two, but some of these...
All right, here, listen.
Oh, I see it. All right, well, when you put it in that context... Yeah, all right, I got it. All right. Well, that
I forgot
was...
about the ha ha he he ho ho part. That was funny.
Oh, that's a song that was banned when I was a kid. Also, find that one if you can. It was they're coming to take me away. Ha ha he he ho ho. Did you ever hear that? Oh, this was really controversial. I was a kid.
Yeah, I remember.
And they wouldn't play it in the New York stations because, I mean, it sounds crass, but. The people who were paranoid, and people like an institution. And I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk. Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, haha. They're coming to take me away.
Good God.
They were just seriously, I don't mean to make light of it, but people that had, you know, mental disorders, this was driving them out of their minds. They were just completely freaking out. And they said, no, we're not playing that anymore, because I can understand why. I got a little uncomfortable myself. Yeah, it was a little. I started to look at the front door and the back door, and you know, and I don't see Simon. Hey, did somebody come take my dog? Dang! So I don't know. Anyway, wow, they're coming to take me away. we'll take a break, and then we'll continue on ESPN 680 105.7.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
CardNation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.